Good evening. I want to take just a moment to welcome those of you who may be visiting with us from other places. This evening we're going to be doing something a little bit different. My wife and I returned this last Wednesday from a three-week trip in Brazil, and I'm going to take the opportunity this evening to talk a little bit about some of our experiences and some of the work that's being done in those places that we visited. We began our trip on Thursday, the 1st of December. We flew out in the afternoon. Flights to Brazil are typically at night, and so you arrive there the next morning, Friday morning. And we would go to São Paulo, typically first, and we would stay there with Dennis and Benita Allen. The church here has supported Dennis in more than one location, and for his in his work in... I'm hoping that I touch that and it's not automatically going. Otherwise, we're going to have an exciting evening. Or I will anyway. It'll be confusing for you. But at any rate, the church has supported Dennis and his family down there for approximately 12 years now in Brazil. He does very good work down there. And we stay with them typically as much as possible when we are in São Paulo. This time, we had the opportunity almost immediately to begin teaching at a place where Debbie and I and were members when we lived down there, and that was at Colonia. They have classes on Thursdays, Saturdays, and then, of course, they meet on Sundays also. There is a family, an American family down there, that is working with this congregation much as we did, working primarily with them, and that is the Mike and Monica Bozeman family. Some of you may even know that family. They have three fairly small children. And there's a picture of them in their home. And I'm going to apologize already in advance for the quality of the photos. I am not a photographer. There were a lot of things I probably should have taken pictures of. I didn't. I took some odd pictures, which I will share with you. And at any rate, some of these may be hardly recognizable. Just kind of nod and smile and pretend that you can see what I'm telling you is there. The first day, Sunday, that we went there. We went Saturday night, and then Sunday we returned there, and I taught there on Sunday morning, and then I went to another congregation a little bit farther north in São Paulo in called Guarapiranga. But when we were there Sunday morning, a new member, a young man, a teenager that I had never met before by the name of Frankie, that's Frank, Frankie came to me. And never having met me before, he came to me and said, "Are you Mike's father?" Well, Mike's only about 2 or 3 years younger than I am. Mike really enjoyed that. And so did the rest of the Brazilians. In fact, the last day we were there, which was the 15th, on a Thursday night, I taught a class there, and Mike closed the service with the avisos, the announcements. They do the same thing there that we do here. And he made the observation to the congregation that he sure was glad to have his dad there in Brazil. And so I got the opportunity to be a father to Mike. There's the same family in the home of another family of Christians. This is where we went Sunday afternoon following the service at Colonia and prior to the afternoon service at Guarapiranga. Off to the right, or to the left rather, is Gilson and Angela. I spent a lot of time working with them when we were there in Brazil back in 96 and 97. There's a gringo you probably recognize. We had kind of a cookout that day in the afternoon, and that is Gilson. Off the back of his house, you get an opportunity to kind of see a little bit of some of São Paulo. São Paulo is a huge city. I don't know what the actual population of São Paulo is. It's probably only about 10 or 12 million. The metropolitan area is about 22 million, so it just kind of goes and goes and goes in terms of size and population. This is a picture of the Colonia building. When we first moved there, they were meeting at the very beginning. They were meeting in an old chicken coop. It was previously used for chickens, and then we moved to a renovated bar. We didn't serve. But that's what it was in the past. It was kind of on the corner of a street, and the buses would go up the hill, and the dust would roll into the building. Chickens would come in. You always leave your doors open. We have services. But eventually, they bought a little piece of land on the other side of Arjingranji, and David and Jonathan and I helped the brethren down there for I don't know how many Saturdays, months, build this building. And it's a very nice building. It's got tile floor instead of kind of the obligatory concrete floor. You notice the chairs there, and you can see off to the top left, there's the AC. It's three fans that I mounted on the walls there before I left, and they use that in hot weather, which incidentally it is summertime now in Brazil. Here's another picture of the same building. It's not a huge building, but it's a very nice building, and it's adequate for the size. I was encouraged by Colonia. Every time I go there, there are new people there, which means that they're working. They're converting some people. There are new families there, not just singles, but there are new families there. And that congregation is doing well, as near as I can tell. I do have to share this last photo with you. Took this after one of the services from the back of the building. If you look up on the right side there, you can't see it. There's a little platform here. It used to be all tile. And then about a year ago, actually between my last trip and this trip, they put in a baptistry. I don't know how many of you brethren have kidded about the trap door here, but when I went up onto the little podium there and I saw that door into the baptistry, I thought about the trap door, and I walked kind of around that door. But they now have a place to baptize, so they don't have to go to a particular or some sort of a river or small lake in the area in order to baptize. Well, we stayed in São Paulo until the 6th of December, at which time we flew out very early in the morning to Jequié. Jequié is a city in the state of Bahia. São Paulo is down here in São Paulo state, and we flew from São Paulo up to Salvador. That is normally to Jequié. São Paulo to Jequié is about a 25, 26-hour bus ride. We were able to fly it in a couple. Oh, I know what this is. I borrowed these from announcement slides, and they're timed. At any rate, we flew up there, and then we rented a car in Salvador and drove to Jequié, which is, 5.5, 6 hours. Or at least so I told Jerison and Edge, and when I called them and explained to them, we would be coming in. The roads were so bad that it took us 9.5 hours. We started at about noon. We didn't get to their house until 9 and a half hours is the way you actually say it. But anyway, 9:30. And this was the car that we rented. I am looking very relieved in this picture right there because I am now giving it back to them in this picture. But this was basically a small metal box with a lawnmower engine in it in the front. And the speed limit's 80 kilometers per hour if you can get anything to go that fast. And the trucks would go on this road. It was Route 116. I'd seen it before, traveled it before. And so we took that route and had a map. But the road was so bad that at places, the trucks, it was a kind of a truck thoroughfare, the trucks would be lined up as they crept over the big holes in the road. And I was kidding Deb. I said, we're going to slow down any time we hit a pothole where I can't see the sky when we go down in. But there were times when I was afraid it was going to take the oil pan right out from underneath the car because the potholes were so big and you couldn't dodge them. But the way you drive in Brazil is you just kind of go wherever the potholes aren't. And so you're driving on the left side, and then you scoot over onto the right side because there's a bus coming or a truck. And then you scoot back on the other side, and you miss that pole. It's quite an experience. It's even more fun after dark. And we discovered that I was driving. Deb didn't have an international driver license or Inter-America driver's license. So I did all the driving, and on the way there, we didn't get to Jequié until like 9:30. It was already a couple hours of dark. And that's when the truckers, who had previously been fairly courteous, become maniacs. They want to make time in the evening. And what they do is Brazilians will push your lane, and they'll come right up behind you. They want you to get off the road and get out of the way. And so we're traveling 80 miles an hour, dodging 80 kilometers an hour, dodging potholes with these trucks just racing down behind us. I was never so glad to get anywhere in my life. And Jerison and Edgen were kind of on edge, wondering where in the world we were. That was our first adventure. And it changed our travel plans on the way back. Rather than try to do the trip in a single day and get the same flight out on the same day, we traveled a day earlier back to Salvador, and we actually took a different route. While we're in Jequié, this is the house that Jerison who we knew, Jerson and his family, whom we knew back from Colonia. Jerson was one of the first Christians, persons converted by the group that went down in 93. Dennis and Gary and Joe Works, some of those. And Jerson is working as an evangelist with the congregation here. He's supported in part by them and part by Parque Santo Antonio, and I think maybe even by Guadalupe, Colonia. This is their youngest son, Andre, here. This is a dirt road here. It's a hill. And while we were there, it rained one afternoon, just torrents. And all that rain went down into those mud, dirt roads. And in places, it just made big lakes. And not knowing the roads, we were driving to classes and to services. We had to take a different route. So we went up a hill, and we got to the top of the hill, and here was this river just kind of running down the middle of the road. And Jerison said, "Oh, you can take that." Well, there's like ruts there someplace. We got down to the bottom of the road, and I was getting onto the main road, the asphalt road. And I got into and the front of the car just went pa-chunk, fell into a pit that had been dug out by the rain. So we didn't damage anything, fortunately, but it was kind of exciting. This is Jerson and his family. We didn't include the sapu, the toad frog that usually would sit right here on the counter. He'd sit here on the wall or on the stove. He's all the time in the house there. He eats the flies that are in there. And, of course, the windows are open, so the passerinhos, the little wrens and other little birds, they come in. They clean the crumbs off the table. It's all kind of a symbiotic relationship between the family of Jerson and nature. This is Mateos. Mateos is very well behaved now. When we first moved down there at Colonia, when I would try to preach, the first preaching I was doing or teaching I was doing in Portuguese, he would run around the building behind me as I'm teaching, and his parents wouldn't say anything. That's just kind of typical Brazilian stuff. They're very easygoing on discipline. And there were times I just wanted to take him and wrench his ears off. But he's a very well behaved boy now. And Jessenie and Andre are also very well behaved. Jerson is a hard worker. Jerson and I went out on Saturday the 10th in what they call their evangelismo. We go house to house, and we went in the area where the church building is. The church there has actually started another building. You bought a little piece of land. They've started it, but the motto in Bahia is kind of like in Mexico, tomorrow. We'll do it tomorrow. So they made a pretty good start, and then everybody got kind of tired, and it's just sitting there, foundation, nothing else. And it's frustrating. Jerson, who is a Paulista, he's from the state of São Paulo, and Paulistas are more like Americans. Let's get it done. And so he's evangelizing in the area of this new building. We went from house to house. Everybody knows Jerson because he's got most of them enrolled in Bible correspondence courses. In fact, on one evening, I went to a study. This would have been on Thursday the 8th, this 2 days after we got there. I went to a study in the evening with a teenager, and the study was the result of this evangelism, this Bible correspondence course, that he goes out and he gives them the lessons. He greets them by name, keeps records of all their names, and then gives them the new lesson, gives them the graded lesson that they've given him the week before. And he uses that as a way of setting up studies. It's interesting. Jerson told me that out of 10 people, he'll get 8 of them signed up on these courses. Where here, how many people would we send sign up for Bible correspondence courses if we went door to door out of 10 different homes? Maybe one, if we're lucky. But the people there read the courses. I saw the courses and the grades they were getting. They fill them out. They're fairly diligent courses. But it's what they have to read, and they're very interested in that. He's working pretty hard on that, and I was impressed with what he's doing. There's their yard, and of course, everybody plays soccer. Andre wouldn't talk too much until we talked a little bit about futebol, brasileiro, and then he just became a wealth of knowledge. There's a gringo who cannot leave construction behind anywhere. And this is where Edgina does her wash outside, and the pipe had broken there, so we went and bought a 2-meter piece of pipe. Had to go there on his motorcycle. They don't have a car. They had a car until about 2 weeks before we got there, and it was just so bad, and his support's been cut. So he sold his car, and he had this motorcycle. When they go to church, what they do is he takes one of the kids and his wife or two of the kids, and he drives them there. It's about 10 minutes to the building. Then he comes back and gets the rest of the family and goes back again. Well, anyway, so we went to the hardware store on the motorcycle, and I'm in the back with this 2-meter piece of pipe. And so I thought, well, we're knights. So I dropped that pipe, and Jerrison got a big kick out of that. I don't know if he understood my Portuguese, but he finally did get mesa redonda, and so the round table guys were the ones that we were. Anyway, we fixed the pipe, but it's a different kind of lifestyle, that is for sure. This is my buddy. The camera gave him the evil eye. He didn't actually have that. He's a starving dog that is the neighbor's dog, but he sits at the door, and I made friends with him because I gave him some leftover bread that we'd bought on the way from Salvador to Jequié. He stayed there the whole week waiting for more scraps, but he's their watchdog. He doesn't actually belong to them. On the way, the house isn't much, but this is the view from Jerson's backyard. He has a little piece of land there, planted some banana trees and various other fruit trees. And it is gorgeous country. It's mountainous, very pretty. That you're now looking at the city of Jequié, a city of about 210,000 people, although the size of the city belies the population. We arrived at Jequié on the 6th, study with the church on the 7th. I had a study on the 8th, two home studies on the 9th, participated in the evangelism door-to-door work on the 10th. We had a church study that evening. And then I preached and taught on the 11th. On the 12th, we made the drive back to Salvador, and we took a different route, which was more excitement. To avoid the bad road, we went on other roads. This is the church building. This is where they meet. I think I told you about this last time. I was really hoping they weren't here anymore because they'd moved to a new building, because they have a fan that sits right here. If you're preaching, this is where the fan is, and it's going. And so you're trying to preach, and your Bible's pages are flopping, and that sound right behind you, but you don't unplug the fan. That's almost grounds for church discipline, because it's hot, and the people are out. Stretch to the edge of the building, to the front of the building here. You can see the chairs there. And some of them even get out almost into the street because you get more air. It's cooler there. But at any rate, it makes for a whole lot of confusion. It's hard to preach and teach with that. This is a new convert. She is a teenager. Her name is Juicy. Don't ask me. I don't know. This is the fella that we went to visit, him and his mother, his family. You recognize the gringo lady. He was supposed to study with her, and I was there, so I went with her, and I ended up teaching the class. And she seems like a very well-grounded young lady for the short time that she has been a Christian. I think she's also a result of some of Jerrison's work. This is another family that you probably can't see very well. One of the more affluent families there at Jequié. I had kind of an interesting experience. The first thing I taught when I got to Jequié was a lesson that I preached here about the training of the 12 apostles. Well, after the lesson, their oldest son, who's not pictured here, came to me and he wanted to talk to me about Judas. I said, great, when you want to do it? Well, the next day we're going to have a home study at his house. Jerrison normally taught it. I went and they asked all the hard questions they'd saved up. And so he wanted to talk about Judas. I said, fine. So the next morning, got up early, got out my little translator and my Bible and everything. I looked up every passage I could think of about the apostle Judas and made notes about how he had betrayed the Christ and what the implications were for free will and all that stuff. Got to the study and found out he wanted to talk about the book of Judas, not the apostle Judas. He was interested in Judas verse 6, where it talks about the angels who sinned. And so I had all this stuff. And they just got a hoot out of that because I'd misunderstood what he wanted. There's, in my defense, this is the father. That's how he talks. And so you can't hardly, they can't even hardly understand him. Well, his son's doing the same thing. And so I missed the point of what we were supposed to study. Let me see if I can catch up here on some of my notes very quickly. We drove to Salvador on Monday the 12th, and we took a different route. The route was a beautiful route. It was through kind of more of the countryside even than the other road. This was a little river that flowed along the side of the road, but we spent about 25 to 30 kilometers on a road, a dirt road, that apparently had been paved like last century or something, And it was just pothole after pothole. And so we crept along at about 10 kilometers an hour for, I don't know, a couple hours. And finally got to that. Here's a sign, one of the little towns. This is so interesting. Jesus Cristo el Señor de Ubaira. Ubaira was the name of the town. And that was the sign at the opening, the kind of the entrance of the city. There's the Catholic Church there, rather a splendid church building considering the size of the town. There it is again. We stopped along the highway. We'd gone in and got a picture of the sign and come up. We were going up a hill and I saw this building. So we stopped. Deb took a picture of the building. And while we stopped, we noticed on the other side of the road, there were buzzards, vultures on almost every fence post. So we stopped and took one picture and then another picture. I told Deb, I said, they're waiting for the Americans to die. And every once in a while, you'd see a dead animal, big dead animal on the side of the road, and that's what the people do. They drag it up there, and the vultures get them. Anyway, here's more of the countryside. It's just gorgeous countryside. I did find one Brazilian very attentive to us. He was just kind of standing on a hill beside the road and didn't move, never budged an inch. So we stopped, took his picture. Don't know his name. But anyway, this is in Salvador. Salvador is a very historic city. I didn't know that prior to the trip. This is a lighthouse there down in the south part of Salvador. Salvador is where the Portuguese and the Dutch and various other ones would enter into Brazil. And there are a lot of forts there as they tried to maintain control of Brazil. So we drove back to Salvador on Monday, stayed in Salvador Monday night, flew back to São Paulo the next day on the 13th, came into Guarulhos on the north part of the city, which is where we had departed from and come in originally on. Let me see if I can catch up. The next photo that you're looking at is actually Dennis Allen's family. It is an updated family. He now has two sons-in-law who are Brazilians. This is Renato. He is the husband of Heather. Megan is also married. That's not her child. Emily is Heather's child. But Megan is married to another Brazilian. The young man there in the middle is their son Joshua. This is Benita, and there's Dennis. Joshua is 18 and very good looking. And I have his address. He graduated from high school on that Friday. It was kind of interesting. They graduate in a tux. Their graduation is very, very elaborate. They don't start the graduation until 9 o'clock, and typically it'll go all night and into the morning hours sometimes. The Allens didn't attend that long, but nevertheless, it's quite an affair. This is another church that we went to on the 14th, on the evening of Wednesday the 14th, San Bernardo, and Mike and Monica are in the back there. You can't see them very well. They go there occasionally. I taught a class there on hope. This is where we went on Sunday, the last Sunday that we were there. We attended actually in three different places. We started in Guarapiranga in the morning, and we went up to Guilhermina Esperanza, which is up near Guarulhos, on the opposite side of the city, for their afternoon services. There's Debbie. This is the group here. This young lady was baptized about 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago now. This is apparently Namorado, her boyfriend, Leopardo. And her name is Fabia. And Fabia is a brand new Christian. This group is very small. At times, I think, gets discouraged a little bit. And so it was a big thing for them to have a new convert in the group. These pews were built by Dvorak Incorporated. When we were down there, we built them for another congregation that has since gone out of business. And so the pews were given to this congregation off on the other side. It's interesting. We drove all the way from the south part of southwest side of São Paulo all the way up to the northeast side. And then they have their services at 3 to 5. And then I was scheduled to preach at Parque, which is way back down on the other side, the southeast side again, that evening at 7. So we had 2 hours. Actually, it turned out to be about an hour and a half to get back. We did fine. Dennis gave us directions until we were supposed to get on the margin out. We missed the entrance. And so we're winding around in all of these subdivisions in São Paulo trying to figure out where we are. Not a good thing to do, especially if you look like a gringo. And so we managed to make it in about 5 minutes till 7, and so sweaty, I rushed up to the pulpit and preached there on Sunday. That was nearly the last thing that we did. I taught one more class on Monday, the 19th. See if we can catch up here. On Monday the 19th, at Parque Santo Antonio, a class on the Book of Revelation. I want to share a couple of things with you I think were kind of interesting. I promised you firecrackers, and so I'll do that tonight. On the first Sunday, the 4th in São Paulo, for some reason during services, there were firecrackers going off everywhere and during the afternoon. And what we found out later, it wasn't a holiday, it was a soccer championship, and the Corinthians had won. They were the campeones. Then on the 11th, there was another soccer championship. I'm sorry, on the 18th, the last Sunday. And I'm preaching at Guadapiranga. Their building is on top of a man's house, and it's open on the sides. It's got windows on the sides, covered. It's kind of like a covered terrace sort of thing. And we're up there, and the fireworks are just going off constantly. And I learned that another championship was going on, and the Brazilians are very big about soccer. They were celebrating. So I got up to speak, and I start speaking, and I just barely get started, and all the fireworks go off. You can't talk over them. It's so loud. It's right down on the street underneath the building. So I stop, start again, then it started again, the fireworks. Finally, I said, we're leaving on the 20th, and apparently some of the Brazilians have already caught wind of that, and they're celebrating. And the congregation just loved that. So anyway, we got through it, and that was the fireworks. At Jequié, there's an interesting practice that they have. Of course, we have songbooks and we have the little supplement. A lot of times when they sing, they have pastas or folders that they have songs on, no notes. They have these words, verses for various songs. But as often as not, what they will do is they'll say, open your Bible to Psalm 42. And the congregation knows that in Psalm 42, there may be 10 verses, and they're going to sing verses 6, 8, and 10. And parts of those verses. And so when we would go there, and this has happened on several trips, when we go there, you open the psalm, but I have no idea what they're going to sing. They're singing straight out of the psalm. And sometimes the singing is horrible. I just got to be frank with you. I'm not sure they all know which verse. They seem to follow one another, but there doesn't seem to be any real rhythm to it. They're just kind of working their way through the psalms. I'll tell you something else that's interesting. Many of you have been members of the church for years and years and years. Do you sing without this book? If you know what the name of the song is, if you know what the song is, can you just set the book down and sing the song and know all the words without having to look at it? Some of you are shaking your heads. I'm impressed. I've been a member of the church for over 30 years, and I don't do that yet. But in Brazil, typically, Brazilians do not read music, and they don't have the notes with them. Even if they have books, Cantor Cristão, that they use to sing out of, what it is just a book with a bunch of verses in it. It doesn't have any music. But they know the tunes to all these songs, so many of the songs. What's funny, though, is from congregation to congregation, they sing the same song differently. Every congregation has their own rendition of it, a little bit different from some of the other congregations. But they sing psalms. I was talking to the psalm class this morning when we were studying in the auditorium class that the psalms that were used in public worship, they were used for devotional, private devotions, obviously, also. Well, that's what they do. They use the psalms and they use the exact words that are written. They don't take a songbook that has borrowed from the psalms. They actually sing the song, the psalms as they are found in the books. A couple other things I think are interesting that are different from us, and that is they place a lot of emphasis, Brazilian congregations do, on prayer. There's a practice there. It's at Guadapiranga does it, Jequié does it, I think Colonia may do it also. They have a reunião dos homens. They have a meeting of the men. At the same time, the women meet in two separate groups. And what they do is basically all the men get together, and they just go around and each man prays. Now, it's not a chain prayer. They're not adding, but each man offers a separate prayer. And you'd think that that would be redundant. Before they start this, the men and the women are together and they rehearse the various concerns that the congregation has. And it'll go from sickness to giving thanks for their jobs, giving thanks for their families. Please pray on behalf of my sister. I'm trying to convert her and she's not listening. And and stuff like that. And they rehearse all these concerns, and then the men and the women separate, and the men, even the smaller boys, will pray, and fervent prayers. I was amazed at the passion of some of the prayers and the variety of the prayers. They did this at Colonia. Colonia, after the Thursday night class, we end the class, and I thought we were finished, but they've picked up the practice of all the men going to one place. The women stay in the auditorium and the little salon there, and the men will go around, and they'll each pray. They talk about their concerns, what things we need to pray for, and then each one of them offers a prayer, and I joined in that in each place. The women do the same thing by themselves. And so there seems to be a lot of emphasis on prayer. At the end of services, or when they're ready to finish their services, usually they'll have pedidos and avisos. They'll have petitions and announcements. And people will speak up. And it's interesting to me how personal a lot of the petitions are. A lot of the supplications have to do with my family. But not just supplications. People say, I want to thank God because He's been very good to my family, because I have a job. Or I want to thank God because I have my children and they're healthy. And so the congregation will offer a bunch of things that they're interested in praying about. And then the person who offers the final prayer, in the case of a regular assembly or a class, will mention a lot of those things, although not necessarily all of them. But I was amazed at the emphasis that they have begun to place more and more on prayer. I promised you floods, and so I've given you a little bit of flood. When we came back to São Paulo on Monday evening following the class at Parque on Revelation, we were coming home, and it rained real hard during the class period. And so on the way home, we had to ford two little rivers that had come into the across some of the low-lying roads as you go back into where Dennis and Benita live. It brought back some memories. When we lived down there, we had an old blue VW Fox that was kind of resting out around the doors and everything. And we were coming back from Colonia one day, and it was in the evening. We were tired, and it had rained, and it just flooded. You couldn't even see the road. Didn't have any idea how deep it was. But out in the middle, it was about halfway up on an average car. But I was tired, and we were going home, so we headed on out. And so we're going through this river, and the water's coming in the doors and coming up along the sides of the doors. But we made it. Brazilians don't understand it. If you go too fast, it washes that water up, and that's what floods you out. But anyway, we made it through the floods, both in Jequié and São Paulo. A lot of interesting things that happened to us while we were there. I'll tell you one of the things that strikes me that I'd like to share with you, and that is, as I go back from time to time, I see a lot of the same people. I see some new people, which is wonderful. Some of the congregations are really growing. Most of them I saw new people. San Bernardo I didn't know that well, so it's hard to say. But I also was saddened by the fact that in almost every place, there were people that if they had not fallen away, I could tell from what I knew of them that they weren't as strong as they used to be. And I think that's a warning. That even though we continue and we're attending and life goes on, it's very easy to get tired. It's easy to get distracted. Some of the Brazilians are just distracted by the fact that they've got more stuff now. They're a little better off than maybe some of them were in the past. And some of them have just lost some of their spirituality. I think there's a note there to be taken that we need to be careful likewise. I wonder at the end of 2006, a year from now, what our spiritual condition will be as individuals and as a congregation. Congregations there seem to be doing pretty well. Although I notice at Jequié there doesn't seem to be a lot of interest among some of the adult males in helping with the evangelism. It's the pre-teenagers that are out knocking on doors and trying to drum up studies and teaching studies. Every congregation has to continue to be diligent in order to remain faithful. And some of those congregations may not in the future remain faithful. I wonder what will happen to us in the coming year. It will depend largely on what you and I do as individuals. Well, I appreciate your attention. I've spoken longer than I'd intended to. My Christmas present to you was supposed to be a short report, and I'm not sure you got your gift. But anyway, I appreciate your attention, and I appreciate the support that the congregation as a whole has offered, and in particular the elders. They have been very, very supportive, not just of this trip, but of trips that I've made in the past. Debbie has sometimes gone with me, and the opportunity for her to go with me this time was very, very good. It was wonderful to be able to meet some of the people that we had been with in the past, both of us together. And so I appreciate very much the opportunity to be gone and also to be supported financially in that kind of work. Most of what we do when we go down there, because of the time frame, is exhortation. We're encouraging brethren. The brethren are very encouraged by the fact that people are taking the opportunity. Americans come down there and they spend some time, some intensive time, working with people, trying to help them with subjects that maybe they're not as familiar with. Spent a good bit of time talking about the Holy Spirit while I was down there. That is a subject of some concern there. Charismatic groups have made a lot of inroads into Brazil in years past. That continues to be the case. And so Christians find themselves faced with a lot of questions regarding the Holy Spirit. Those studies were well received both in Bahia and also in São Paulo. I preached a lesson several times while I was down there. It's a lesson that I've preached here. It is the lesson, The Way God Answers Prayer. And I made the observation to the Brazilians that God doesn't always answer prayer the way that we might expect Him to do so. And that's illustrated in Romans 15 when Paul made several requests of the brethren at Rome that they pray with him on his behalf, that God would do these things. And all of those requests were in fact answered by God, although not probably the way that Paul anticipated when he wrote and ask for their help in the prayer. And I made the observation to the Brazilians that years ago, my prayer was that God would use me in preaching the gospel however He thought was best. But I never really anticipated that He would send me to Brazil. But I made the observation to the Brazilians that the result of that was that I was introduced to a whole spiritual family that I would never have known about otherwise. It's good to have a family here, but we need to understand there's a whole family out there that in many cases we just don't even know, but there are people just like us who are trying to do right, who are facing in some cases the same kinds of difficulties we're facing, who have in some cases much greater difficulties. They face the same kind of temptations, they have the same kind of family problems, they have the same kind of concerns that we do as Christians, and they're our family. Even as we are their family. And it is a wonderful privilege to be a part of this family. At some point, we'll be together in heaven. The Brazilians like to remind me that in heaven, everybody will speak Portuguese, and you guys are behind. Down at Guilhermina always reminds me that he appreciates the Americans who have come down there to prepare themselves for heaven, because we're learning to speak Portuguese where everybody's going to speak Portuguese in heaven. I don't know what we'll speak in heaven. I don't know what language. But I know we'll be together. I know we'll have a common fellowship with God. And if you want to be a part of that family, it doesn't make any difference whether you live in Brazil or whether you live in Europe or Africa or Indonesia or here in the United States. The plan is the same. And it's wonderful that despite some of the differences, maybe some emphases that are different in these Brazilian congregations, so much is the same. Lord's Supper is the same. We sing some songs that are very similar. We preach the same gospel. And people there are baptized into Christ for the remission of their sins, even as we are here when we respond to the invitation of the Lord. And tonight, maybe that's what you need to do. Maybe you're outside of Christ. You've not obeyed the gospel. If you believe with all your heart that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, there's no reason why tonight, having repented of your sins, that you cannot make your confession before this audience that Jesus is the Christ and will baptize you right here in the baptistry that's conveniently heated and located behind us for the remission of your sins, and you become a Christian and a part of this huge family that extends all around the world and has extended through the ages. Tonight, if you need to obey the gospel, why not? Why not come tonight as we stand and sing to invite you?